Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad will call in and tell a jokey joke. Sorry we missed last Monday. Today would have been, had we not missed it, today would have been joke number 200. So today is going to be 199. So we're talking about things that make people who work at grocery stores very angry. We're going to talk about frozen pizza and other stuff. My dad will tell a joke. But it is Monday morning, and we have to get back to work here. And it is the Monday morning movie reviews. We missed last week because last week for me was a nightmare. We're going to catch up on some movies that came out last week, talk about the new movies of this week, and talk about the box office. Big box office story this week that we are going to get into. And it's Colin Suter and Eric Childress who are joining me as they do every Monday morning to review the movies, and let's welcome the guys here and get to it. Eric, welcome. Welcome.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome.
Hello there.
All righty then. Did you guys have a good week?
Yeah.
Probably better than yours.
It was better than mine. I can tell you that. Anyway, for people who don't know, I'll talk about it a little bit later on. We just talked about it. I was out last week. It was an issue in my apartment, and it's been resolved. They still have to come in and repaint the wall and fix the wall and stuff like that. But outside of the damage in the wall, which they're going to fix, there was no water at least.
Yeah, I dealt with a smaller version of that many years ago when the snowpocalypse hit, and yeah. I can't imagine it being worse than what I had, but it sounds like you had it like 10 times worse, and I really feel for you, man.
Well, it's funny. We were talking about this before, but, you know, when people were calling in, asking where I was, and Dan would tell them, they'd be like, well, it's not that, well, it doesn't even sound like a big deal. Why is he missing work? They clearly have not dealt with this.
Right.
Clearly, you have never dealt with this situation. I know it's like, oh, there's a leak. No.
Yeah.
No.
So. Every time you post it, Nick, I just imagine you running away from the fish tank in Mission Impossible.
Yeah, no, it was not pleasant. It was not a pleasant week. But I'm glad I'm back, and the wall will be repaired in its entirety, and it looks like it's okay. But it was an unprecedented amount of snow. You know what I mean? And it all, yeah. It's just, so.
Right.
That's when the stuff happens, when it's extreme weather. I've lived in this place for 7 years, and nothing like that has ever happened before. So, anyway, but I'm back, and positivity is what we're talking about today. So,
right.
By the way, before we get into last week's, we'll catch up on last week's movies, talk a little bit about that, and then talk about this week's movies. And the big box office story, obviously, is Black Panther. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to mention that you guys are doing a podcast that's going to be posted later today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's tell everybody about it. It's a night from 1988. Eric, tell everybody about it. You guys are talking about the movies of 1988 as a 30th anniversary thing.
Yeah, this is the fourth year we've been doing this with our friend Jim Laskowski for his Voices and Visions podcast, where we have basically reviewed an entire year. We go from basically January to December and just talk about films that stood out, films we revisited, do our top 10, top 20 lists, and just kind of generally give a general impression about stories and personal things that happened to us during these years, and it's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. It sounds like it's going to be a long podcast. I mean, if you're doing a whole year, month by month.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot. I think it's broken up into two parts, and each part is 2 hours or a little over 2 hours. So, yeah, we cover a lot of ground. I want to amend something that Eric said. It might be on Voices Vision, but the links that Jim sent us today are for Directors Club. I don't know. Maybe he'll do both. I don't know. But
well, you can always just go to nowplayingnetwork.net,
right.
And because that's where you can get all of the podcasts there, and it'll be up later.
Yeah.
It'll be up later today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
for people who
are
interested. Yeah, it sounds like it's a lot of fun. I'm just trying to remember some movies from '88. First one that pops into my head, Dead Ringers. That's the first one that pops into my head because it was my favorite movie that year, followed closely by Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Those were the two that immediately came to mind.
And you got Die Hard, you got Wings of Desire, you got Bull Durham, Hairspray.
Oh, it was a good year.
Fish Called Wanda, Midnight Run.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's a good year.
It was a pretty good summer.
Yeah. Midnight Run. God, I love that movie. So anyway, check it out. It's a 30th anniversary of the films of 1988, and Eric and Colin and Jim talk about it, and you can check it out at nowplayingnetwork.net. So I just wanted to mention that first.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
All right. So we've got to go back to last week, since we missed last Monday's movie reviews. And Eric, why don't you you take care of 50 Shades Freed?
Yeah, let's finish this one off. 50 Shades Freed, the conclusion to the trilogy involving Anastasia Steele and Christian Grey. People know what these movies are about. It's just amazing. I can't think, you know, I was trying to think if there's ever a trilogy that basically revolved around a singular romance before. Nick, Colin, can you think of anything that stretched an entire romance that was the central focus of a series for three movies?
Well, is the Twilight movies?
I mean, Linklater's before movies, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on in that, those, and you know, they're just talking for three movies than there are in these 50 Shades movies. But if people are interested in what was going on in this one, they have, Christian and Anastasia have been married. They got engaged at the end of the second movie. And they're adjusting, not really adjusting to married life. He's a little upset that she doesn't want to take his name. He's not too happy that she wants to have a baby because he's not ready to share her with anyone, let alone a child, I guess. He's a real nice guy, this Christian Grey. But meanwhile, things are not so great on the outside either, because the stalking ex-boss of Anastasia is still after them. He may have been the one responsible for the inexplicable helicopter crash that happened in the second movie, and he's got some tricks up his sleeve that he's trying to separate these two, and it leads to stalking and potential kidnapping and bodyguards and a lot of very vanilla pedestrian sex, I gotta say. You know, for a movie that, you know, basically prided itself on being different and trying to explore their whole bondage S&M milieu, whatever they're going for. The stuff in this movie is very vanilla, except for revenge sex, which comes up. George Costanza never talked about revenge sex, but you get a little of that in this movie. And, you know, the first movie was absolute garbage. It was horrible on every possible conceivable level of filmmaking and storytelling and acting, for that matter. The second one, at least, was so stupid and so ridiculous that there was a little bit more of a pulpy flavor to it. It was still terrible, but at least it was kind of funny. This one goes right back into the garbage pail, because spending, you know, having now spent three movies with this Christian Grey character, it's amazing to me that any woman, particularly with everything that's going on nowadays, would subscribe to this guy being their ultimate fantasy. It's really kind of stunning that anyone finds any kind of romance or pleasure in watching this guy, you know, basically try to strip the identity away from the Anastasia character. And she's not even that interesting a heroine protagonist either. It's not like some story about her taking everything back, because she just kind of, you know, she just kind of silently protests a little bit, and she, you know, she yells at him one time and stuff, but, you know, but then she gets kidnapped and he has to, you know, rescue her and all these kind of things. It's just so bad. I mean, watching this movie, I couldn't believe that they mustered three movies out of this. And to top it off, at the end of the movie, they actually give you one of these montages that trace their entire relationship from the first movie to the third one. Jeez. As if we couldn't remember for the last 3 years that this thing has gone on. You know, it's so ridiculous. It's so trashy, not in a fun way. There are better ways to spend your time with characters who are constantly doing it. It's called Porn. Look into it and avoid this movie.
Okay. A recommendation for porn, everybody.
That's right.
All right. Eric.
Better acting, better production value.
Eric, hang on. And Colin, hang on. And we're going to take a break for the news. And when we come back, we will talk. We got another movie to talk about from last week to catch up on, and then some movies from this week and some box office as well. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and we will come back after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Back, happy to be back. And my thanks to Dane Neal for filling in last week. I appreciate it. And we're back, and it's Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about some things that annoy people who work at grocery stores, and we got a little frozen pizza topic to talk about as well. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. All right. That's what's happening. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Facebook, best way to stay connected, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And it's time for to get back to the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to talk movies, review the new stuff. And we got to catch up since we missed last week. Got to catch up on a couple of movies from last week. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Eric, why don't you tell us about, Colin, why don't you tell us about the 1517 to Paris?
Okay. This is the latest from Clint Eastwood, and it's the third in a trilogy that celebrates American heroes, starting with American Sniper and Sully. This one stars the actual people who inspired the story. This is the story about the three Marines who helped stop a terrorist on a train to Paris from killing hundreds of people. And that's pretty much what the movie builds up to. The bulk of the rest of the film is about their friendship and how they met in elementary school, how they kept in touch after being separated from each other at a young age, and how they reunited years later. The central character is Spencer Stone and how he eventually decides to join the Marines for a specific duty for which he's eventually disqualified. But we see him going through the basic training and learning other things that will come in handy later on. And then the last third of the film is about, you know, these three guys and their trip to Europe and backpacking through Rome and eating gelato and meeting women and all that. And you know, it kind of culminates into the train. But there's flashbacks and flash forwards to that as well throughout the piece. So this is a pretty brave choice to cast these three individuals as, you know, playing themselves. They're clearly not actors. And on one hand, I want to commend Clint Eastwood on attempting that sort of authenticity. Not a lot of directors would have the courage to do that. Unfortunately, Clint Eastwood is not the director he once was. He is not an actor's director anymore, it seems. He famously is happy after the first take or second take, and it shows in movies, especially movies like J. Edgar and American Sniper, that the actors he's getting are great actors who are not giving their best performances. So now he is sort of making the task even harder for himself by casting non-actors and not really achieving the authenticity he's after. A director who's much better at this sort of thing would be Paul Greengrass and the stuff he did with United 93. If you're using that as a reference point or, you know, a comparison point, maybe it's unfair, but at the same time, that was a movie that achieved exactly what Clint Eastwood can't seem to achieve with this movie. It's not the fault of these three individuals that they're, you know, that the movie comes off a little wooden and a little hollow. They're not actors. It's not their fault, but it is a movie that seems to, it doesn't have a lot to say about their heroism. It doesn't have a lot of build up to what they're eventually going to do. We know what's going to happen, but the script as written doesn't give them much in the way of depth or personality, or and the dialogue that they're given sounds very much written. It doesn't sound at all like how these three individuals probably thought. This is an experiment that is very noble. It's certainly a good story to tell, but I just think the execution ultimately falls flat, and it's really unfortunate.
Okay. Eric, what'd you think?
Yeah, I didn't like it at all either. And I'm certainly, like Colin, I'm certainly not going to blame these three guys for not being actors. But I will put all the blame, not even completely Eastwood, but on the screenplay in general, because this is pretty much the of all the possibilities you could do with a story like this, this is just the absolute wrong approach to take with it. Because there's, you know, unless you're, like Colin said, unless you have something to say about their heroism or heroism in general or destiny and things like that, which you would take a much better screenplay to pull off, we're not really that interested in where these guys came from. We don't really need to see them meeting as children. The interesting story is actually what happened to these guys afterwards. Whether it be the trauma of, you know, surviving a situation like that, the fame and the infamy that comes with, you know, being associated with something like that, or even just the discussion of, you know, is this going to be the only thing that these guys are known for the rest of their lives? I mean, Eastwood kind of, did that with Flags of Our Fathers a bit. And it would have been an interesting extension of that film to do it here, and even just have the three guys there and take a more documentarian approach to it. Start with the train incident and go from there. I mean, even if you wanted to, you know, throw away some sort of like Rashomon thing and give the train thing from each of their perspectives and their memories of exactly what happened, that could have been interesting. But like to take them all the way back to childhood and training and watching them walk through Europe taking selfies and ordering gelato is just not right. And there's a scene in the movie where they actually visit a site of Adolf Hitler that I groaned so hard in the theater that I may have offended people in the theater, because I just couldn't believe what, you know, where that scene eventually goes. And yeah, the train scene is well done, and when you watch it, you kind of get a sense of not just how heroic these guys were, but just really how lucky they were as well. And that's not to take away from their heroism, but you know, especially in light of, again, things that are going on recently, I think that, you know, makes more for a much more interesting story. But unfortunately, Eastwood's not the guy to tell that story, because he's just focusing on the heroism part, and you don't get a lot of that in a 90-minute movie where the train thing is only about 10 minutes worth.
Yeah. So, but the train scene, is it well done? Is it?
Yeah, it is. For the most part, but it's quick.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it has nothing like, you know, like Colin said, you know, nothing to obviously the extent of something like United 93.
Well, yeah.
Even something like Captain Phillips, you know, or something like that. This one is just, they kind of spruce, you know, moments from the train throughout the movie to sort of remind you that this thing is going to happen at some point. And then they piece it all together at the very end. But by then you're just kind of like, oh, thank God we're getting to this really horrific incident that happened.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly how an audience should be behaving during a movie like that.
That's the response that most people have, or what you guys had to it. And I'm disappointed to hear that. Cause I'm, you know, first of all, you know, I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan, and I think it's an interesting idea, and I'll definitely see it probably when it comes to, you know, DVD. I would have seen it last week, obviously, but I didn't get a chance to. But everything I've heard about this movie has been, you know, mediocre to bad. I really haven't heard a good review yet.
Yeah, it's really one of his weakest efforts.
Yeah. Okay, that's too bad. That's the 1517 to Paris, came out last week, and we'll talk about how it's doing at the box office a little bit later on when we do box office. I do want to mention this, though. There was very entertaining segment with Clint Eastwood and the three guys on Jimmy Kimmel's show.
Mm-hmm.
So Clint Eastwood comes out first. They talk to Clint, you know, and then they will come back from the commercial, and the three actual heroes will be out. So the three guys come out, and I don't know which guy. It wasn't Spencer, because I know the Spencer guy is sort of the main dude. One of them, so Jimmy Kimmel, when they come back from, you know, the break, they interview them and they talk about the incident. They talk about making the movie and what it was like, and so Kimmel. Kimmel asked them, "So you guys going to be actors now? What you intent on acting, continuing to act?" And one of the guys goes, "You know, I just got back from an audition." And he's like, wow, okay. And he's like, you feel good about it? He's like, yeah, I think I did okay. And so you're going to pursue this. He's like, yeah. And then he asks Clint, he goes, Clint, would you cast these guys in any of your other movies? And Clint goes, no way. And I just, I about fell off my couch. I was laughing. Without a beat, no way.
Yeah.
Well, even he knew.
There's another thing about this that just occurred to me, that at the end of the movie, you see that it's not three guys, it's four guys who got credit for this incident. The fourth guy was, I think, an Englishman who was a doctor who was helping out with this.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
How come he doesn't get a movie? You know, like, well, how come, you know, he's got to be like, wait, where's my movie?
Well,
you know?
He didn't rush the people, Colin. He just held an artery.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when he shows up at the end, he gets a medal too. You're kind of like, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, so it's like that's another narrative flaw.
Well, it's also, yeah. But you know, obviously, clearly, the focus of the book and the focus of the movie is on American heroism. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that guy's not American.
Hence my groaning at the Hitler scene.
Yeah. So it's yeah. Well, anyway, it's disappointing, but yeah, I just if you get a chance to check out that interview. Just Clint going, no way. Oh, Clint. All right. He'll have another movie before next week, I'm sure.
He's already making one.
Yeah, right.
He's a guy. I can't. How old? He's 86 years old, right?
I think he's like 88.
he's more prolific than guys in their 30s making movies. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are good, I have to say. That's the thing. I like, you know, the majority of Clint Eastwood movies quite a bit. And so, okay. 1517 to Paris. You guys hang on because we got a break.
Okay.
All right. And we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, talk about some other movies from last week, and then we'll jump into this week's movies and box office because it is the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and we shall take a break and be back right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor, Trib Tower, here till 5. Monday morning, that means Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every weekend, or every Monday, to talk about the weekend movies. And we were off last week, so we're catching up. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, tell us about the Oscar-winning shorts. This is always fun.
Yeah, every year Magnolia Pictures puts an effort to make sure people get a chance to see the Oscar-nominated short films for the completists out there, myself being one of them. But as always, it's a mixed bag. But mixed positive, I should say. So I'll start with the live action. There's a movie called DeKalb Elementary. Now, this one is unfortunately timed, of course, with current events, so it may hit a little too close to home. But it is about an armed guy who goes into an elementary school without much of a plan. He doesn't want to kill anybody, and he doesn't care if he dies. But he's in there with a gun, and the receptionist at the school is compassionate and trying to talk him down and talk him out of it. Pretty good movie. Pretty good. It doesn't offer much in the way of insight or anything like that, but it's well made and the acting is good. People see the sight of the guy walking into an elementary school with a gun. Don't worry, this is not going to end in a big bloodbath or anything like that. It's a good movie, though. Another one called The Silent Child, and every year there's a short film that centers on a child, usually in peril of some kind. But this one, not so much. But it is about a little deaf girl named Libby who doesn't communicate much with her parents, and they hire a sign language specialist played by Rachel Shenton, who also wrote the film and helps her with her communication skills. But there's a conflict with her and the parents about how to deal with her deafness. This is, again, a pretty good movie. It's a little too over-stylized in parts. And for some reason, somebody felt the need to put subtitles in it for what is perfectly, the movie has perfectly understandable English accents. The subtitles are pretty redundant and unnecessary, but they're there. There's a short film called My Nephew Emmett, and this is about Emmett Till and, you know, the night that he was killed by, you know, those racists. And this is about his uncle who had to identify the body. And so it's a lot of it is told from his point of view. And this is a very good film. It's hard to do period pieces in a short film because short films typically have lower budgets. And so when you're shooting with digital video and you don't have the best production values, it's kind of hard to pull off a period piece. But this movie pulls it off pretty well. the 11 o'clock is a little 13-minute comedy starring Josh Lawson and Damon Harriman. And it seems like it was born out of an improv exercise at an acting class somewhere when you watch it. But it's about a psychiatrist who has to deal with his delusional patient who thinks he's the psychiatrist. And so there's a lot of banter back and forth. It's kind of a, two characters in a room comedy. It's pleasant enough, but usually the English language crowd pleaser usually wins this award. So this might be the winner, just going by a pattern, which would, kind of be unfortunate because there's not much to it, but it's the way it goes sometimes. But the best one, I think, is the only one that's not in English. It's called Watu Wotse, which means all of us. It tells the story of a Christian bus passenger in Kenya who travels across the border to Somalia, and she makes friends with a Muslim on the bus, and then the bus gets taken over by terrorists, and everybody's ordered off and separated between Muslims and Christians, and, everyone's sort of heroism is tested. I think that this is the best one. It's just got the most chops as far as, cinematic qualities. It's got the best acting. It's really well done, and I'd love to see it as a feature. So those are your animated live-action films.
So that's the live-action short film.
The entire program runs about an hour and 40 minutes total.
Okay.
So that's pretty good.
All right, there you go. So, and they also have the animated short films.
Yeah, the animated ones are better, I think, this year. And we start with Dear Basketball, which is...
Kobe Bryant nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, how about that, right? Not bad. And it's pretty good, too. It's told in, these kind of pencil drawings, and Bryant is basically writing a love letter to basketball and how, his life growing up, dreaming of basketball stardom and eventually achieving it. It's very earnest, of course, but it's nice that it has, this kind of low-key aesthetic that kind of contrasts with the spectacle of his life on court. And it's got music by John Williams, so it's going to be stirring. but it's good. No, that's a good thing. It was cool to see John Williams' name in the credits of a short film. And then we got a movie called Negative Space, and this is about a 5-minute film about a guy who's kind of recounting his relationship with his father, who is always away on business, and the one thing that bonded them together was how to pack a perfect suitcase. And it has an unexpected emotional impact, and there's a really lovely kind of oddness to the character's appearance in this film. It's kind of hard to describe the look of it, but it's my only criticism is I wish it was longer, which is a good criticism.
Yeah.
And then Lou, if you saw Cars 3 in the theater, the Pixar short that came before it was Lou. And this is Pixar rarely loses this category.
Yeah.
I can recall one time when they lost this category. They might win with this one, too. It's about a schoolyard bully named Lou who steals toys from his classmates, and they eventually just develop a mind of their own, and there's a nice little confrontation. And this is, again, this is why Pixar is the best at this sort of thing. This movie kind of demonstrates that. It's really terrific. And if you're a Roald Dahl fan, the title Revolting Rhymes might be familiar to you. This is by far the longest of the 5 nominees. It's 29 minutes. And it's basically all the three of the Roald Dahl versions of, what is it? Snow White and two other fairy tales. I can't remember them now off the top of my head. But anyway, they take these three fairy tales and blend them all together into one big narrative. The animation is okay. It's nothing special, but it's Roald Dahl's voice, so it's mischievous and unpredictable. And you can tell the people who made it really have they really have respect for Dahl's work, but they're not totally they're not trying to just do his stuff the way he did it, like Spielberg did with the BFG. This one, I think, is charming. It's very good. But my favorite short film of this year is called Garden Party. And this is a very photorealistic animated film that looks so, it looks stunning. It looks so real that, as our friend Steve Procopi said, he thought they were cheating with the animation. But no, it's animated. And it's about these frogs that are finding, that are just sort of inhabiting this mansion. And they're finding all kinds of goodies around the house. But it looks like there's something either apocalyptic or violent happened in this mansion. And it's been kind of abandoned for a while. And this is what would happen if Pixar ever indulged in a really sick and twisted story. You know, it's like if they were just said, we're not going to make one for kids. We're going to make one for us. Because the final gag in this movie had me laughing out loud. It is really weird and really beautiful and poetic and kind of sick and twisted, too. And it's absolutely my favorite of all the short films this year.
There you go. That's Garden Party.
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of other animated films they put with it because the program wouldn't be long enough to sustain, you know, or
right.
charging a general admissions price. So I haven't seen the other shorts that are with it, but I hear they're very good. So this is always a treat to see these programs. So I'm especially recommending the animated shorts, and the live action shorts are pretty good too.
All right, and that's you can see this at the Landmark Century Theater. And,
yeah, the Landmark, the Catlow Theater in Barrington, the Lincolnshire. You can also stream them on iTunes, Amazon, or Vimeo On Demand.
Okay. Yeah, there's lots of ways you can see them.
And then next week, Music Box will be having the documentary shorts, and I've seen those too. So
okay.
Talk about those next week.
Got it. Very cool. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Right.
Eric and Colin are here, and we played catch up on the movies from last week. So now we're going to do the movies from this week after we take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower here till 5 a.m. Monday morning. That means my dad's going to tell a jokey time. And I'm glad to be back. Thanks, everybody, for your patience. And thanks, everybody, for Dane and for filling in and all that cool stuff. I'm back and ready to go for another round here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show, but the best way to stay connected is facebook.com/Nick D Show. We've got fun stuff coming up. My dad's going to tell a joke, and we've got some grocery store stories to tell you about, and some frozen pizza to talk about as well on the show. But right now, we're in the movie reviews, and we caught up on last week since I was off last Monday. Caught up on last week, and now we're up to this week. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week. And let's welcome them back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, tell everybody about Early Man.
All right. Well, this is the latest, getting back to animation, the latest animated film from Aardman, who are responsible for Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit and Shaun the Sheep. As this title indicates, it's about cavemen and cavewomen, and it focuses on this little village of cave dwellers. They happily hunt small creatures because the bigger mastodons and mammoths are just too intimidating, so they stick to bunnies, and they're very serious about that. Then one day their village gets invaded by giant bronze creatures, and they learn that there is a whole other civilization out there who have discovered how to make bronze objects. So they have castles, they have stadiums, they have everything else you could possibly make with bronze. They have basically invented soccer, or as they say in England, football. And it's going to be important for American parents to tell their American kids that soccer is called football in England, and this is an English film. So, and it's a major part of the film. So the people of this bronze land capture the cavemen, and eventually a soccer game between the two worlds becomes the focal point of the story, as one team has to learn the game and be good at the game before they can hope to play it and win and get what they need and save their village. So that's not what I was expecting when I saw this film. Was that it was going to be a sports comedy, but that's basically what it is. I thought it was just going to be cavemen and cavewomen running around and doing caveman things. But once that part of the story kicks in, the movie just kind of loses its appeal. It becomes a very standard, very cliche-ridden, very tired sports comedy, and from a studio that is really known for being very original and unpredictable and very clever with their sight gags and their set pieces and everything. But this one, it felt pretty tired through a lot of it. And that really pains me to say that because, you know, it's one of my favorite animation studios. I didn't laugh quite as much as I had hoped to during this film. I mean, there are some funny moments. It's not complete without laughs. But when you're, you know, a studio that is known for stuff like Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run and even Arthur Christmas, the bar is set pretty high. I mean, the movie does have a very talented roster of voice actors. It's got Tom Hiddleston, Eddie Redmayne, Maisie Williams, Timothy Spall, Miriam Margolyes, Rob Brydon has a few voices in it. And they don't sound quite as inspired as you would hope they would be. I mean, listen, I would still rather watch Aardman's weakest film than anything from Illumination or almost anything from Blue Sky. It's still better than that. So,
yeah.
And the opening sequence is great. I mean, the opening sequence is just is filled with so much promise. And, you know, this is really an English film, and this is probably Aardman at their most English because they are very much into soccer in this film. You can tell the filmmakers and the writers are very serious about this. It's kind of almost like John Lasseter with Cars. You know, he made it for him. This might just be Aardman's. They made it for themselves. But, you know, they've done better work, and I hope to see better work from them in the future. And I guess something has to be their weakest film. Well, this is it. it's marginally better than Peter Rabbit, which I also saw, but nowhere near as good as Paddington 2. So if you're looking to take the kids to something, you could do a lot better, do worse.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. That's so disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, I love their work. I mean, I truly, just from Wallace and Gromit on.
Yeah.
And again, I was really looking forward to it. And, you know, again, I didn't have a chance to see it, but I will definitely, when it comes out on DVD, give it a look because I'm not going to not see it.
Yeah. So, right. It's Aardman. You should at least give it a chance. There are critics who like it.
Yeah.
So, I was hoping for, I was really hoping for another Pirates movie. The Pirates movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
But no, not really.
Okay. All right. That's too bad. That's Early Man, the latest animated from Aardman. And all right, let's get to the big one that came out this week. Eric, tell us about Black Panther.
Okay. Marvel Universe introduced us to T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman in Captain America Civil War. And this movie kind of takes place after the events of that film where the king of Wakanda was killed by the villain of that movie. And T'Challa is now about to reclaim the throne of Wakanda. But meanwhile, there is a villain played by Andy Serkis who is being assisted by another guy known as Killmonger, Eric Killmonger, that's Eric with a K, played by Michael B. Jordan, and they're out stealing some artifacts from Wakanda. The entire country is basically rich in vibranium, which is the very precious metal, the most indestructible metal on the planet, in the universe. So they're trying to basically find their way either back to Wakanda or find a way to fight the people that are destroying their smuggling efforts. So these people are eventually going to meet at some point, obviously, as T'Challa attempts to defend the throne and his country. Michael B. Jordan's character, though, has a very unique connection to Wakanda, though. I don't want to give too much away,
but
eventually he does become one of the central conflict of the movie, and he believes he has a right to the throne as well. So this leads to, I mean, as plotting goes, that's about as much as there is to the plot. As Marvel plots go, this one doesn't exactly stand apart from your other typical sort of, you know, comic book adventures that we've seen. People who follow the comics probably have a little bit more insight into it than the movie actually offers. However, the film is getting noticed for obvious reasons, and while people refer to it as Marvel's Black Panther. What they really should be doing is referring to it as Ryan Coogler's Black Panther, because his voice and his vision is all over this thing, and it's really the thing that makes the film stand out. That, obviously, and an incredibly impressive cast. I already mentioned Bozeman and Jordan, but the women that populate this film really stand out and really bring a presence unlike that we've seen in a lot of comic movies from whatever studio might be out there. Lupita Nyong'o, Dana Guerrera, and Letitia Wright, who plays T'Challa's sister in the movie and kind of plays the Q of the Wakanda world, is especially terrific in the film. There's also Martin Freeman, who's reprising, his role from Civil War as a CIA agent. He's kind of playing the Felix Leiter role to Wakanda in this film, as the white guy that just kind of, you know, he's there and he helps out just enough to get things done. But the thing that's obviously getting all of the attention is the fact that you have a mostly African-American cast just kicking butt all over the place. And this is not a film that I would say is especially rich in action, but when it does occur, Coogler brings some of the same excitement that he brought to the boxing matches in Creed, his last film. There's particularly a casino fight that turns into a car chase that is especially terrific. And I even enjoyed the climax quite a bit. And it's a film that is, I wouldn't say put it in the top tier of the Marvel films. I think people are inflating the film just a bit, but it's a very good film. It's absolutely unique, and people should absolutely go out and see it.
Okay. All right, let's take a break here. Eric, hold on. Colin, hold on, and we'll find out what Colin thinks of Black Panther, and we'll find out what I thought of Black Panther, and we'll do that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio. It's Monday morning. My dad's going to tell a joke, and we are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. Before the break, Eric told us all about Black Panther and his review of it, and he liked it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, what did you think of Black Panther?
I liked it a lot, too. There's a lot to admire here, a lot to appreciate. This cites three things that really stand out to me. First of all, Eric mentioned the action scenes, and I couldn't agree more. Coogler is a real force behind the camera when it comes to action, and also with the editing. One thing I noticed when watching this movie, very minimal use of slow-mo during the action scenes, if any. I don't even know if there was any. But that's really important, because that's something that always drives me nuts, and something that I kind of come to expect in your average superhero movies, and there's none of that here. So every action scene retains the excitement, and every punch that's thrown is, every kick and every character that defies the law of gravity somehow, it's nothing is slowed down for us, for no reason or anything like that. I mean, it's really well-directed action. Another thing, the music. The composer of this movie, Ludwig Göransson, I haven't really noticed any of his work in the past. Maybe Creed. I haven't seen Creed in a long time. Maybe the score was really good.
His score for Creed is great.
Yeah, okay.
It's great.
So I kind of remember that, but I only saw it once. But, I mean, I love the score for this movie. It is not your typical Marvel score. The use of, the chants and all that is just electrifying. It's really great, great work. The other thing I wanted to mention was this is a Marvel film. So when a character finally gets their own film, we kind of expect other Marvel characters to come in at some point. Not this time. This is a Black Panther movie. Everybody else stay home. So the script doesn't have to bend over backwards to try and bring in the Guardians of the Galaxy to help out with anything or something like that. It is strictly Black Panther, and I'm so cool with that.
Yeah, well, until the post-script.
Right.
So,
come on, we expect that. We knew that
right,
was
right.
But I agree with Eric, maybe not top tier, but definitely worth seeing. A lot of fun. Socially significant, of course, and that's great. The Marvel Universe needs that, so I definitely recommend it.
I think I liked it more than both of you guys. I thought it was great and just really beautifully directed. We're talking about Coogler as, you know, being a force of nature, and I agree with you 100%. And I think that he directed the hell out of this thing. You talk about that, the casino fight that turns into the car chase. That's an incredibly well-executed extended action sequence. And he's got this really amazing way of doing the long takes, you know, and choreographing stuff with the camera movement, you know, and maybe tricking you into thinking it's one take when you can trick people by doing that. But that's how that casino thing starts. It starts with this elaborate long take. I mean, I remember in Creed, they had an entire boxing match that was one take, you know, like just mm-hmm. the camera moving around. And he's really strong at that, and it really makes a difference. And it's not really calling attention to it either. It's just really well made and well done. I also want to mention that Rachel Morrison shot this movie. She's nominated for an Academy Award for Mudbound. And I just wanted to mention that because it's a beautifully shot movie. I mean, this is incredible cinematography on this. She shot Fruitvale Station with Coogler, and now she's got an Oscar nomination for Mudbound. And I wanted to basically mention how good a cinematographer she is. That adds to it too. I think the use of special effects is fantastic. The CGI is great. You mentioned the score, Colin. The score is great. It's absolutely great and unique. And as much as this is a Marvel movie, it kind of doesn't feel like one. It feels different. I mean, and I think maybe that has something to do with, kind of like you said, they're not trying to jam any other Marvel characters in this. And I think the direction of it is different. And like you said about the score, it just feels different. It has a different feel to it. And of course, you know, the fact that like all the main characters are African American is great. And that adds an entirely different take on it. I think all the performances are good. I think Chadwick Boseman is terrific in the title role. Michael B. Jordan is a total badass. I think he's great. You mentioned all the women. The women are extraordinary in this movie. And you've got people, you know, Forrest Whitaker shows up. I mean, Sterling K. Brown is in this movie. It's got a great, strong, awesome cast. And I think that there is a real, I think that there's a real emotional payoff at the end of this movie. I was more emotionally drawn into it than I ever expected to be. And one of the final shots of the movie, you know, made me kind of tear up. I think there's just great stuff in this movie, and I think it's great. I think it's really one of the best. It's one of my favorite Marvel movies of all time. Now, I wanted to mention, and you did briefly, Letitia Wright is so good in this movie. I had no idea who she was. I saw her. I remember she was in Black Mirror. She was in, and she's done like a lot of sci-fi and weird stuff, but I've never really seen her. And she is a standout in this movie, and I love her as the James Bond Q, you know. And there's a scene where she's like, "Okay, I made a couple of new suits for you. Can you strike one of the strike the suit?" And then he kicks it, and the suit goes flying. She's like, "You didn't have to kick it that hard."
Right.
And then what the payoff after that is so funny. Like what happens after that is so funny. She's great in it, and you know, I hope to see more of her in these Black Panther movies. And she's got a major part. She's a princess. She's his sister. But I think that was wonderful casting. Daniel Kaluuya is in the film, another Oscar nominee from Get Out, and he gets to ride on a giant rhino. So, and that's all cool. Like the final battle, the extended battle was beautiful, and you know, it was typical of like, you've got like three different sort of battles happening, and you know, the villain and the hero, you know, in a fist fight and all that stuff. But it's done so well, it's choreographed so well, edited beautifully, really exciting. I saw it in one of the Dolby theaters. I would suggest people. I didn't see it in 3D or anything like that. Did you guys see it in 3D?
No, but we did see it in Dolby Atmos at River East.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I highly recommend that you go to the Dolby Theater. I highly recommend it because the sound was magnificent and it looked beautiful. I loved it. I absolutely loved Black Panther, and I really couldn't recommend it highly enough. I think it's great, and I'm glad that it's such a hit, and I'm glad that it's making an impact, and I hope to see more movies, and I can't wait for Coogler's next. I really can't. I think this guy's an extraordinary talent.
I agree.
So, all right. Mm-hmm. Next week, what do we got? We got Annihilation with Natalie Portman.
And Game Night.
Which looks really funny.
I hope so.
Yeah, Game Night with Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams.
Yep.
And it looks like The Game, but a comedy. David, it looks like David Fincher's The Game, but a comedy. So that's all coming up, and we'll review all that next week. All right, guys. Eric, you stick around.
Mm-hmm.
Colin, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Alrighty, bye-bye. All right,
there you go. There's Colin. Eric, you hang on for a second. We'll take a break. We got the news here, and then after the news, Eric and I will talk about the week in the box office. All right, we'll be right back after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. And we're here. It's Monday morning. That means my dad will tell a jokey, jokey, jokey time. That's coming up. We're going to talk about grocery store stories and, speaking of grocery stores, frozen pizza. Little stories about that. Having some fun this morning. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us there. That's the best way to stay connected. All right. We reviewed the new movies for this week, caught up on last week, and now it's time to talk box office. Eric Childress writes a box office analysis every week. You can see it at movies.com, and he talks to us every week about it as well. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, the big story, clearly, Black Panther, $192 million. I saw it Saturday afternoon with a packed house.
Yeah, and this was totally expected. I've been saying for weeks. They kind of lowballed the tracking on this for a few weeks now, and I've been saying for a couple weeks now that I thought that by Sunday it was going to outgross Get Out,
mm-hmm.
and it absolutely did.
Yeah, and we're talking about the entire money that Get Out made while it was out.
Yeah, it's already outgrossed the first Thor movie, Ant-Man, and the first Captain America movie.
Wow.
In 3 days.
Wow.
And now, which is the question isn't whether or not it's going to hit $400 million, which it absolutely will, is whether or not it's going to hit a half a billion here, and whether it hits a billion worldwide. And I think both at this moment are both very possible.
Yeah. And I think this movie is going to have repeat viewing. I think
without question.
I think people are going to go back and see it 2-3 times.
This is a movie that's crossing over, you know, all spectrums and whatnot. And I'm sure there'll be some stupid backlash in a few days or a week or so. But
There always is.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
there will be repeat viewings. Colin mentioned, I think you mentioned too, there's a cultural significance.
There is.
To this movie.
Absolutely.
And happening now, again, at this time,
yeah.
it's something that people can't ignore. And the fact that it's really good, it only increases its value.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be huge, and it's going to be, it's probably going to be number one for at least the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what else opened on the 9th, but I think there's got nothing to challenge it really over the next 2 weeks, at least for the number one slot.
Right. Yeah, I don't see Annihilation.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
I mean, Black Panther next week wouldn't shock me if it's did another $100 million next weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm happy, too, because it's a great movie. And, I'm really specifically happy, one, because of what this movie means to the culture, and for Ryan Coogler, who I just think is... Right out of the gate, I love that guy.
Yeah,
he's great.
I remember this. I mean, last year, you know, Get Out was the story. We're about 1 year removed from Get Out that became this huge story, and that was a word of mouth sensation. It played, it kept playing, it wouldn't go away.
Right,
and it took 237 days for it to reach 176 million.
And this movie beat it by 20 million.
Jordan Peele won the title of most successful, most highest grossing black director ever until F. Gary Gray reclaimed it with Fate of the Furious.
Oh, right.
And it beat that in like 12 days, and now here's Black Panther doing it in 3.
That's amazing. Oh, that's a huge success. Huge success.
Yeah.
All right, and deservedly. Number two, Peter Rabbit, $17.2 million, $48.2 total. That's okay?
Yeah, no, it's actually pretty good. I mean, it had a pretty good hold. I mean, it's really the only kids game in town other than Jumanji, and I think everyone on the planet has seen that at least 3 times already.
Yeah.
Peter Rabbit's doing fine. It's already outgrossed Paddington 2, which I know upsets the Paddington 2 crowd.
Right.
This thing is probably headed for somewhere over 70, 75 million.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, Eric, hold on a second. Just hang on a second, Eric. We got to take a break here real quick. There's something going on in the traffic. And Esmeralda, what do we got?
Yes, inbound Stevenson at Damon. We have a crash there. All lanes are down, so we're seeing those delays starting to hit at Western. But this is at Damon, inbound Stevenson. All lanes are down.
Oh, boy. Okay. Thanks, Esmeralda. Keeping an eye on that. Okay, Eric, let's get back to it. Number three, 50 Shades Freed, $16.9 million. Its total is $76.1 million. This will be the lowest grossing of the three. Correct?
Yeah, it ultimately will be, and it was boosted, like, it didn't look like it might not hit $100 million last week after it opened, but it had a $10 million plus Valentine's Day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it was like $10 million was the highest grossing, it was the highest grossing film on Valentine's Day, and like the next film was like $1.7 million.
Wow.
So women went out to see, you know, 50 Shades Freed, and it's going to help push the movie over $100 million. And it's a huge success overseas as well. So, I mean, for a $55 million budgeted film, these are huge moneymakers for Universal.
Wow. Okay. Number four, boy, it won't die. Nope. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, $7.9 million. Its total in America is $377.6 million. That is a massive hit.
Yeah, and it's going to try to get its way over $400 million in the U.S. I mean, that's just a number at this point, because second highest grossing film Sony's ever released in the States. It's over $900 million worldwide. And I just started looking forward tonight because I saw a preview for Rampage.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that Jumanji dollar is going to spill into that.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. Okay. Number five is the 1517 to Paris. 7.6, only $25.4 million in 2 weeks. That's not very good.
Not really. No, this is kind of what I was expected, even before the reviews. As much as you want to celebrate these guys, the kind of rah-rah America stuff is not really selling as of late.
Yeah.
And it's not a very good movie on top of it.
Okay. Number six, this is another one that won't die.
Yeah.
The Greatest Showman at number six, $5.1 million, $154.4 million.
Yeah, it has officially passed La La Land in the States.
Wow.
Worldwide. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Not worldwide. Worldwide, La La Land still has it by about $120 million or so.
Yeah.
But this is an impressive, an expensive movie, more expensive than people might think. So the profit is a little bit muted, but it's still very much in profit.
Wow. Okay, number seven, this is disappointing. We heard it wasn't very great, but I always root for these guys. Early Man, $3.1 million. Nobody went to see it.
Yeah, and this is on Lionsgate. I mean, because, you know, Colin wasn't crazy about the movie, but it does have an 81% rating at Rotten Tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
so critics do mostly like it. But Lionsgate, for some reason, can't successfully market their animated titles. They had My Little Pony last fall that only did $21 million. Their highest-grossing animated film in their history is Alpha and Omega.
What?
Yeah, which only grossed $25 million.
Wow.
I mean, they released the Shaun the Sheep movie a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And that only made $19
million. Wow.
So I think Aardman's got to get away from Lionsgate.
Yeah, that might be the way to go. That's too bad. All right. Eight, Maze Runner, The Death Cure, with $2.5 million, $54 million total. That's a bomb, right?
Yeah, bust in the States, but again, huge numbers overseas, like $186
million. Wow.
I don't know why these movies, I think some of the cast has got some international appeal to it, but these movies have been incredibly successful overseas.
Okay. That weird.
I don't get it, but
Number nine, Winchester, $2.2 million, $21.8 million total. That's a bomb.
Yeah, but it costs nothing.
Well, that's
true. Reportedly cost like $3.5 million, so $21 million. It's not great. I don't think the international dollars have been calculated very well yet. But it's mild profit, mild bomb, mild disappointment.
Okay.
Basically.
Hey, number ten, Samson.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on there? $1.9 million.
One of my favorite Bible stories. I always liked the story of Samson. And I saw a poster for this at the Toronto Film Festival last year. I think, I don't know if they were looking for distributors or something, but there's this giant poster in like the press lounge of Samson, and over the title, Billy Zane. So I want to see this thing.
Wait. I didn't even know. I haven't even, Billy Zane playing Samson?
No, he's not Samson.
Oh, okay.
He's probably he's one of the kings or the underlings.
Oh, all right. Okay, because yeah. I was going to say Billy Zane playing Samson, he's known for being bald. I would have been like...
Well, that's the magic of movies.
That's exactly right. You should listen to your friend Billy Zane.
That's right.
That's still my favorite line in any of the Zoolander movies. You should listen to your friend Billy Zane. He's got to be the villain because all he's been doing since Titanic is playing villains.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I 100% got to be.
Wait, how many theaters
I don't remember
this...
Samson having like a buddy.
No, he doesn't have his a cohort. Yeah, it's Samson right. And his pal, Willie. Who released this? What's the deal on this?
Well, this is Cheerflix. This is the Catholic faith-based company, and what 1.9 million that it made this weekend is on the low end even for them.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean, I didn't see any advertisement for it. I mean, I'm not watching the right channels or something, but
I didn't see anything for it. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't really know about it until I think like a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it's only like 1,100 screens. 1,300 screens, something like that. So it's not a huge release, but you think that you might, you know, see something for it somewhere.
Right. And how are the Oscar-nominated movies doing? Have they picked up at all? Is like Three Billboards got anything going? Or
Both Shape of Water and Three Billboards have become the top 10 grossers in Fox Searchlight's history.
Wow.
They're ninth and 10th right now at 53 and 49 million. So they both had a nice bump. The Post is up to like 77 million. What else? Darkest Hour obviously had done very well.
There you go.
Those are the big ones.
Those are the big ones right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so Black Panther is your story for this week. $192 million. It is a huge hit. What do you think next week? How do you think, Black Panther obviously will be number one, no question about it.
Without question.
Any idea how Annihilation is going to do?
I have a feeling it's going to do not very well. Paramount, they have been scared off because they got a bad test screening like sometime last year or something.
Uh-huh.
And so they've like made a point to hide this from a lot of critics, even though those who have seen it are like raving about it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
I
think it looks great.
Yeah, but Paramount is hedging their bets or something. They're just kind of sticking with their early reviews. It's not screening here until Wednesday, so I don't know what to make of it. And it wouldn't surprise me if Game Night beats it next week.
Oh boy. Okay.
I mean, I've seen more ads for Game Night than Annihilation.
Yeah.
And Paramount sold off all the international rights to Netflix. For Annihilation.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
That's how scared off they are, which seems just stupid. I mean, put the movie out there, let the critics see it, let them rave about it, let us do your work for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's Alex Garland, and everyone liked Ex Machina.
Yeah, and it's a great cast.
Right.
Okay. It looks cool, too. So, all right, well, we'll see what happens next week, but we know Black Panther will be number one again.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Sure thing.
Take care. There you go. Eric Childress, everybody. He and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. We'll do it again next week.